Chisholm. I'm just Chisholm.
Yeah, ciao, Fudgebaggers. Welcome to Pure Boys Podcast. First episode of 2023. I'm Adam and Chiz.
And I'm Steve. And boy, are we bussing it out today. We love religion, and that's basically it.
Hey, that's been our show. Have a great week, everyone.
No,
just kidding. We can't do that. We have segments we have to get to.
Not this episode. No. Next episode, maybe.
Sure. Next episode, maybe we won't love religion. I don't know.
I love religion.
This week, we're talking... This year. Hey, welcome to a new year, new pee.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. This is... I am going to have the newest pee this year. That's my wish to all of you, and my promise is that this year it's a new pee. What are you going to add to your diet to get yourself some new pee?
Huh, that's a good... Probably just beets, I think. Just a lot of beets.
Yeah, beets.
Just get it nice and red, yeah.
Yeah, beets are the new crop. They're like the new avocado.
Well, yeah, it's wintertime. You want to eat with the season, and beets is in.
Yeah, eat the beets.
Yeah, eat your beet toast, millennial cucks.
Yeah, with an egg on it.
Ooh, that does sound delicious.
Yeah, don't forget that your pee's going to be red.
And that's what I'm aiming for. I guess your pee would be more orange in that case, because
it's
the yellow mixing with the red, the pee, you understand.
More oranges, yeah. I get it.
Exactly.
I guess your pee doesn't change color, hey, when you drink beet juice?
I hope not. I mean, I've never noticed that. The only time I've noticed my pee being different is when I eat asparagus, obviously. And this is going to be an unpopular opinion, but I kind of like the smell of my asparagus pee. It's not... I'd rather smell that than normal pee.
Really? I love the scent of my normal pee. Now... If I have asparagus, I feel like I'm like a monster, just like a person that hides under people's beds and then pees like weird, gross sock smelling stuff.
Like a cat.
Ropes.
Yeah, ropes. Shooting ropes. Yeah, of course. 2023, new year, new pee.
Thank you. Did we save this for 2023? Like, was this a thing that we thought about in 2022 and then we... shelved it?
What do you mean? New year, new pee?
Yeah.
I feel like we did actually talk about this at the start of last year, right? Because 2022, here comes the glue, obviously.
Obviously.
2023, new year, new pee. So I think we did actually talk about that at some point. It sounds familiar.
This was written in the stone.
Beautiful. One of my favorite Earth, Wind, and Fire songs.
My throat is already starting to go, no, thank you.
Oh, no. Yeah, this guy's got the vid, I think. I think he's got a full-on vid attack.
I'm filled with piss and vinegar. Would you ever add vinegar to your piss, like, after you pee?
Sure, why not? Yeah, for science. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
A little droplet every time, maybe write down your findings, see what happens.
Watch as my pee runs away from the vinegar in the toilet bowl.
I mean, if you're going to say 2023, new year, new pee, you got to live it.
That's true. Well, by new year, new pee, I mean, I'm only going to pee through my erect penis from now on. I'm going to just...
That's tough.
If I have to go pee, I have to make myself fully erect and then force the pee through it. I'm just trying to train my body to be better, bigger, faster, stronger.
Yeah. According to a lot of videos I've seen on the internet, it is possible, but very painful.
All right, well, I'm going to stand on my head and pee down into the toilet from my erect dinger.
Can you get a boner if you're standing on your head?
Oh,
gravity?
Honestly, I've never stood on my head, so I guess the first thing I have to do is learn how to stand on my head.
Train real hard.
Yeah, and then learn how to get a boner while I'm standing on my head, and then learn... God, by the... 2024, pee no more is what it's going to be, because I'm just going to be fully torqued.
You're going to be all out of pee.
Yeah, exactly. We'll come up... pee no more is... Nah, it's... We'll workshop that. We got a whole year to come up with a better 2024 slogan.
Yeah, it's a little garbled, but we'll get to it eventually.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what we don't have to wait to get to? Talking about 2022, nothing is impossible. Finally, we're here. We're talking about a new David A.R. White movie. New-ish.
New-ish. It's pretty darn new. It's hot off the press.
Newest.
As far as movies are concerned.
That's true. Yeah, it's his newest movie. And boy, what a treat. This is, I'm sure in interviews, David A.R. White would call this movie his dream project.
Oh, yeah. Except for Beckman. But he did that. So now he's got to do his new dream project.
Of course. Yeah. Well, and dreams are just God's way of telling us what we should be doing with our lives.
Or it's a picture into another universe where you are another person.
God, what a... I love that, like, that theory that people posit, that your dream is just looking at another universe. Because that, like, other universes are insane then. Like, what do you mean? My dreams are crazy. How can that be true? That doesn't make any sense if it's like, oh, I'm at this Walmart that my dad owns, and also my feet are on fire, and also, like, that can't be another universe, can it?
Yeah, it's the and also universe.
Oh, it's the no and then universe.
Oh, what does mine say?
Oh. I do actually, talking about dreams, I do have a dream I want to tell you about, but first, we need to do the Pure Boys Prayer, and I'd like to, there's a little something said in this movie that I'd like to possibly add into the Pure Boys Prayer if you're open to adjusting it a little bit.
No. Yes.
Okay. Well, at the end of the movie, okay, all right. We'll talk about it afterwards.
No, tell me.
So, well, tell you, you know what it is. At the end of the movie, there is a little prayer scene, and the pastor, Nick, ends the prayer by going, "In Jesus' name we play, amen." And I went, ooh, that's perfect for the Pure Boys Prayer. But if it doesn't fit, it doesn't fit. It's a little wordy. It's a
Let's
lot for us to sync. All right, we'll try it out this time. So.
I'll probably screw it up, but I want to do it.
All you got to remember is, "In Jesus' name we play." All right, here we go. Ready for the prayer?
God bless our podcast, please. God bless all podcasts, please. We love you, please. And in
Jesus'
name
we play. Amen.
Amen.
Or a woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe we'll drop it. It was fun. It was interesting. I just wanted to try it once to see how it felt, and I don't know. Maybe it's okay. We'll see what next week brings. Maybe we'll bring it back. I don't know. "In Jesus' name we play" is such a funny thing to me. But if it doesn't fit, it doesn't fit.
I agree.
I also agree. So we mentioned that this is a David A.R. White dream project, but I have a dream I need to tell you about that happened to me last night that was like very concerning when I woke up.
Give it to me.
So I had a dream last night, and this is true, that I just full-on shit my pants. Like, just full-load dumpage. Just filled my shorts with dump. And then, like, had to clean it up. There was a bunch of people around me, and I was cleaning myself up. And it was this whole thing, and I went from, like, oh, there's a full poop in my pants. I gotta wipe my bum. I have to go through this whole thing. I looked. Yeah, there's poop there. And at no point did my body go, hey, maybe you should wake up and make sure you didn't shit the bed, right? And
not one time.
And then the dream went on. I cleaned up the shit off my body, and then the dream went on, and then I woke up naturally at some point, probably several hours later, and the first thing I did was panically check my pants to make sure that I didn't shit the bed. Fortunately, I didn't, but it was such an upsetting thing to wake up to. It was just like, why did you do that to me, body? Why did you have this dream and then not let me confirm that everything was okay?
Well, the Adam in that universe is obviously incontinent.
Yes.
And you're not.
Thank
so
you.
Screw him.
Thank you for noticing. Yeah. He had to, like, wipe his... The Adam in that universe had to wipe his bum with, like, pamphlets and flyers that were lying around. It was...
And there were people around you?
Yeah, I was in, like, a hallway sitting on the ground. I was sitting on the ground, and I pushed a shit out and then had to wipe it up with pamphlets and flyers. It was, and then the people all around me, and like, I was trying to hide it. I was trying to, like, no, I didn't, please don't come near me. I didn't shit my pants. Closest I've ever been to lucid dreaming.
It's wild to me that a dream can invade our regular lives and our regular thoughts. Like, when you woke up, I'm sure you almost felt like you pooped your pants because you felt the weight of it, mentally and physically.
First thing I did was shove my hand down the back of my shorts, being like, all right, I'm either going to come back empty-handed or with a handful of shit. So I guess we'll
see.
Yeah,
that's a dangerous game.
You know what?
Shoving your hand down your pants.
If you've already shit the bed, you might as well shove your hand in it. That's what I'm saying. That's what mine says.
That's good.
Put that on a shirt. That's I think Confucius said that, actually.
Yeah, somebody else put that on a shirt, though. We're done putting stuff on shirts.
Yeah, we don't do that anymore. We sold one Yiz mug, and it was worth it, but... We didn't even take the money from it. I think like Teespring still has the money. We didn't get. I don't think we set up like a how to get the money from them. They were like, I don't want to deal with taxes and all that.
There's probably some kind of minimum, or we have to pay them to get this money, whatever it is.
Yeah, probably. Well, I guess we'll never find out.
Drink Yiz.
Drink Yiz. Hey, that's good Yiz.
That's good Yiz.
Mm-hmm. Boy, we haven't talked about Yiz in a long time. It became Chiz.
It truly did. And Doug Gilmore hasn't responded to any of our emails for this commercial, so
yeah,
whatever.
I would have trouble responding to someone who was just sending me email after email that just said, eat my jizz.
Yeah, drink jizz, eat my jizz.
Hey, put that on a sign and march outside of City Hall with it.
Yeah, stop Dolby.
That's
or give
right.
us more Dolby.
Well, whatever side you fall on with that.
I just turned my sign around, whichever way I feel that day.
Hey, Steve, 2023, new year, new P. I got a very important question to ask you to start the year off. And it's just such a beautiful question. And that question, of course, is... Whomst was the Bagger Vance of... Christmas...
With
the Cranks,
a capital C.
Christmas with a capital C. Gosh, yeah, that really just disappeared out of my mind.
Yeah, blanked you. I was lucky that when I was pulling up my tabs for this podcast, I did think about the previous movie, and I would have to say the Bagger Vance, and it's so clear in my mind's eye, is good old Alaska.
Ooh.
You might be north of the 50, but you're 49 to me. Now, Adam.
Yeah.
What did you think was the Bagger Vance of Christmas with a capital C?
Well, thank you so much, Steve. For me, the Bagger Vance of Christmas with a capital C was, of course, probably... Brad Stein's unhinged rant about happy holidays when he stood on a table and was yelling at a bunch of people about not saying happy holidays. Now, Christmas is the only holiday in December he cares about, and therefore it's the only one that matters. I thought it was beautiful.
Praise him.
Praise him. Praise his name. Say his name. Brad Stein.
Brad Stein.
That's right. Yeah. Normally we save that for... people who were murdered by cops or something like that. But I think in this case, it still stands.
Well, he was a fallen actor after this movie, so I think it applies.
And he does have a lot of stolen valor. So he's kind of all, you know, he's both sides of the coin.
It does good for everybody involved.
That's true. Well, thank you, Brad Stein. And thank you, Will Smith.
God.
You know, we've never thanked Will Smith for this beautiful segment.
Yeah, and we put a lot of thought into this segment, and he should be grateful.
And we always remember the name of the movies eventually.
Yeah, we remember the character's name and the actors and what happened in the movie for sure.
I'm always so cocky when I start that segment, because I'm like, yeah, I'll remember the name of the last movie we watched, and sometimes I don't. So
yeah.
I'm glad you're there. I'm grateful to have you in my life, and I'm grateful that you're there to help me up when I fall down.
I'm glad you're the Adam to my Steve.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, okay.
Please.
Please. Hey, are you ready for everyone's favorite segment?
Yeah.
The Kevin Sorbo Tweet of the Week.
Kevin!
Oh, man, you couldn't have enough sirens for this Tweet of the Week because Kevin Sorbo has a new pinned tweet.
Oh.
It came out on November 19th, 2022 at 1:40 p.m., which I don't know, it's fine for poop for me.
Sure.
I'm done poop shaming him. It's poop when you like, Kevin Sorbo.
You know what?
Just not be right before noon.
Yeah, poop lasagna, pal.
Yeah. If you poop during the hours of 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., I'm really going to get at your craw. But other than that, you're off the hook forever.
His tweets concern me, though, because he doesn't tweet at like 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. And it's like, are you not pooping during that time? Why aren't you tweeting?
Well, it's probably to conserve energy because he probably does the Mark Wahlberg schedule. He gets up at 2 in the morning, works out for like 5 hours, goes plays golf, and then like puts a pillow over his kid's heads and then takes him to school.
Mm-hmm.
Beats up, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, beats up an Asian man until he's blind. Yeah. Classic.
Eats at Wahlburgers all day.
Of course. Yeah, you got to keep that Hercules bod up.
Kevin Sorbo started Wahlburgers.
Wow, what an honor that he named it after his favorite actor, Donnie Wahlberg.
Yeah. Well, he liked the music more, but... Well, anyways, the tweet today that he has pinned to his social is, the media hates Kanye and Elon Musk more than they ever hated Epstein or Harvey Weinstein, ..
Okay, yeah, fine. Well, Jeffrey Epstein killed himself, so we don't have to worry about him anymore.
Uh-huh.
And Harvey Weinstein, who? Oh, yeah, he's that, like, creepy, gross dude.
Yeah.
Oh.
The one that was in charge of Hollywood.
Right.
California.
Well, what are you going to do?
My heart to your ears.
That's life. That's life, yeah. Kev. That's life.
Yeah, but it's pinned.
Forever. So people, everyone will look at that when they go to his page and go, wow, they... And he's going to be so embarrassed when the world, like, turns the other way on Kanye and Elon and loves them again. He's going to be so embarrassed.
Yeah, especially since Kanye was just trying to get out of contracts. Bobby.
Yeah, he's just trying to get knighted. That's all he's trying to do.
Yeah, he's trying to take over for the queen.
Yeah, of course.
To help.
And they need it. After that Harry, Meghan, Markle thing, they definitely need all the help they can get.
And the queen freezing herself.
Wait, has that happened?
Well, she didn't die, as far as I'm concerned.
Wow, that's a conspiracy I can get behind.
Yeah, she froze herself. She's stacked right underneath Walt Disney in the freezer.
Well, that's a fact. That's a Kevin Sorbo fact.
What do you think they're putting in the freezers? Like, just Antarctica?
Oh, I mean, that's the most logical place to put them, yeah. Although, with global warming, the hoax of global warming, who knows what's going to happen to Antarctica. Maybe it'll be gone in 50 years, and then the Queen will be unthawed, and Walt Disney will be unthawed, and they'll be back.
Yeah, maybe they put them in a hypercube, and they send them to the center of the Earth.
That'd be sick.
Which is hollow.
Of course it is. Yeah, that's where all the celebrities go. That's where all the Nazis went. Duh. And they've been creeping back out, apparently, through holes in the ground, like in friggin' Kong Skull Island.
I really hope that Nazis are on the other side of the moon. Or Titan. Titan would be cool.
Yeah.
I just hope they're out there so we can kick their butts again.
I wish the Iron Sky movies were better.
Documentaries.
They have such a funny premise, and they really go for it, but God, they just suck. They're just not entertaining. It's too bad.
Just, like, do a bunch of drugs and then watch it. Then it's good.
I mean, I've done that. How do you think I watch them? On drugs, of course.
Great.
Mm-hmm. Kids, here's the lesson for the day. Do drugs, all right? Drugs are dope. They're awesome. Tell me one bad thing that happened on drugs.
Disneyland.
Ooh, I'll tell you one good thing that happened on drugs. Yeah. Stephen King's early career. He was doing so much cocaine, writing so many good books.
I thought he was sober for those and then started doing cocaine for, like, the later ones.
No, he was drunk as frick and high on coke and writing the Tommyknockers.
You know, a lot of famous rich people do cocaine and uppers.
Yeah.
It makes me think.
They don't need downers.
Well, no, because... Well, probably at the end of the day, they probably take a bunch of lewds, even them out.
Oh, my God, yeah. God, do you remember how good old Quaaludes were?
They were good. Like when they first got invented, Adam and Steve were on the jump.
The chemists in the lab, we're putting it together, baby. Yeah.
Yeah, God whispers into our ears and we create a drug.
Yeah, he was like, "Hey, make Quaaludes." We're like, "All right, God, you got it." A bush burst into flames and told us to make Quaaludes.
Hey, fuckers. Hey. Hey. Do this. Hey, and then there's just like a bunch of molecules pop into our brains.
I would love if someone made a movie that involved the burning bush, you know, providing a message for somebody, but the burning bush's voice was just like, "Hey, everybody, hey, God, what's up, guys?" Like, he just had like a really dumb, stupid dummy voice. And like, this is what God sounds like? Oh, no.
Like a Harlan Williams type voice or
Ooh, yeah. Who's not dead that we could get to do it? I was going to say Gilbert Gottfried, but he's dead and in hell. I don't know.
Oh, Harlan Williams is still alive, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Yeah, Gilbert's dead. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You're talking about star of Employee of the Month, Harlan Williams.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. That's how they got it to tape.
They were like, "We need Dane Cook and Harlan Williams and Andy Dick, the comedy powerhouse."
Andy Dick was big. I mean, early 2000s. I'm assuming it came out in early 2000s.
Yeah, probably. I think 2006 or 7, something like that.
Yeah. It was just such a ripe cultural time.
Oh, yeah. Jessica Simpson is the romantic lead in it. You want to tell me that there wasn't a riper cultural time than that?
Yeah, I bet you there's a pimp culture joke in there somewhere.
Possibly, yeah. There's definitely a chicken of the sea culture joke in there somewhere.
The best joke that's ever happened.
Whatever happened to Jessica Simpson? We know what happened to Nick Lachey. He's crushing it as something. He's doing things. He's around.
Yeah, he's one of the hosts of Love is Blind.
Is he?
Yeah, him and his wife.
Jessica Simpson?
No. That would be great if they were the hosts of Love is Blind.
And they were like,
that every day.
We got a divorce, and now we're hosting this together. And we can't get out of our contracts. And this is torture for us.
Because love is blind. Dun, dun, dun. Ba, ba, ba.
I ain't never seen Love is Blind. I don't know what it is. All I know Love on the Spectrum. That's what I know. That's the love show I like.
That's a great show.
It is a great show. Yeah. Well, who knew?
Nobody.
No, who knew? Hey, let's go, let's go. Because we got to talk about 2022's Nothing is Impossible.
Yay!
Finally.
Oh. I'm on the IMDb page of Nothing is Impossible, and the trailer has already played, so now it's showing the trailer for Malibu Dan, the Family Man.
Oh,
and it's
nice.
Bringing back a lot of good memories.
Hey, this movie's brought back a lot of good memories. The cast in this movie, I was like, oh, no doubt, huh? That's exciting.
My biggest problem with this movie is, where's Reggie?
Yeah, where's Arlen?
Where's Arlen? Where's Reggie? That's like the only thing I want to see.
That's wow. I hope everything's okay between David, Reggie, and Arlen.
Yeah, like they could have been the perfect basketball announcers. Those two?
Oh my God. Don't tease me, bro. That sounds great. That sounds amazing.
Maybe they're saving that for like the sequel or like its own movie.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. The story of it's called Some Things Are Impossible. Nothing. Some things are definitely impossible. Like that one high school girl who wants to become the first woman on the moon. That's impossible. You're not going to do that.
Grow up.
She's. I do love that scene, though, because they're like, does anyone have any dreams of what they want? You know, does anyone have any dreams for their life? And one person puts their hand up, and it's that girl who's like, I won't be an astronaut. And the guy goes, all right, great. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, shut up. And then they call it back, too.
Do they?
Like, that didn't need a callback. I think so.
Oh, no,
like,
they play
they
the
do
line
a video
later.
Trooper.
Yeah, that's right. They do a freeze frame on the crowd at the end, and they point out what every person went on to do. Most of it is just dead, 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 and then hers is first woman on the moon, where she died.
The Sea of Tranquility. Isn't that a crater on
it
the moon?
Is, yeah.
Or is that Mars?
It might be Mars, yeah. I don't know.
Who cares?
A space guy. I don't want to be the first woman on the moon. What do I care?
What do I care? Everything's going to be great now. I think Reggie and Arlen should definitely have a commentator movie, and they should both contract cancer separately, but at the same time.
That's I love it. Yeah, like one of them has cancer, and then his cancer gets cured, but as it's being cured, the other one gets cancer, the same kind of cancer, and they're just like, yeah. God, why would you do this to us? And God's like, I'm a little rascal.
Yeah, and there's a bunch of cartoons with God, like, switching the cancer cells over to the other person.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, and God's like, oh, hey, Bozo's got you.
Oh, shucks.
From now on, that's how God talks in my head. Just, he's just a real goose.
Ah, the burning bush was a good guy.
Oh, yeah, that burning bitch, yeah. What a cast in this movie. First of all, this movie was directed by the guy who directed Love on the Rocks, which already super exciting.
Duh.
Yeah, of course. And because he directed Love on the Rocks, Stephen Bauer is in this movie.
Oh, Stephen Bauer is so good in this movie. I really thought he had it together until that one scene where they're like drinking late out of coffee mugs, and he just sounds so drunk.
Yeah, he's holding a can with a napkin wrapped around it, so you can't see that it's a Bud Light, and he's just like, I had the shakes before we did this scene. I needed something to level me out.
Like, I really thought in his first couple scenes, I was like, they got this guy because he's a good actor.
Yeah.
And then he kind of falls apart throughout this whole movie.
I think he pulls it together at the end, though, when they're at the final thing. I think he does pretty good in that scene.
Yeah, well, any scene where he's in a gym, he's fully torqued, because it reminds him of the glory days.
As soon as we saw him in this movie and he was sitting down, I went, he is not going to stand for this entire movie. His contract says he needs to be sitting for every scene. However, there is one scene where he's standing and then walks and sits down. Like, he's standing for one. When we first see him, he's like, hello, I'm Stephen Bauer. I'm going to go sit down now, and walks over.
Yeah, he's probably wearing sweats under his suit the whole time.
That's a good look. I think that's called, yeah. I think that's called Winnie the Pooh-ing.
Yeah, that's what winning the pooing is. I like Winnie the Pooing. Do you ever do that around the house for fun?
I don't. We have a lot of windows that our neighbors can see in, so I try not to, like, shirt cock ever if I can.
Like, even, like, how high are your windows? Don't you keep them, like, waist high?
Oh, I mean, they're the lowest of the window is dick height, of course.
Yeah. Well, of course.
Of course.
A horse, of course.
Oh, beautiful. There wasn't an edit there at all. No one
yeah,
will know.
We're seamless.
We're seamless, you know, we're seamless, and we're scandalous.
You can't find the scenes anywhere you look, especially on the court.
Of course not. No, no, not when you're in 2022's Nothing Is Impossible, baby.
We definitely did have a lot more to say about windows and the height to your dick,
sure,
and dick to floor ratio.
Sure.
But we need to move on. We need to be serious about this stuff.
Yeah, we need to talk about the Knoxville Silver Knights, where they initially showed them. I went, is this a WNBA team? What is this? This isn't a real team.
I don't know why a Knoxville Silver Knights team would have red jerseys, red and black.
Right.
Sounds crazy.
Right? I don't know why Knoxville, Tennessee would have a basketball team.
No, definitely not in the NBA, that's for sure.
No, no. One of my favorite things about this movie is that it's set in Knoxville, Tennessee, but only one actor is trying to do a Tennessee accent. And all the people in it are like, claim to be from Knoxville, but none of them have a Tennessee. None of them have any kind of twang in their voice. It's just that one blonde woman who works for the team who's like, oh, honey, sit down. Let me make some sweet tea.
Oh, yeah. She's definitely from the South. A part of some church that funded this.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I IMDb'd her, and I think she's just friends with Dolly Parton because she's in a bunch of Dolly Parton things.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Well, Dolly Parton rules, so now I love religion.
Hey, me too.
Yeah.
I thought Stephen Bauer was the owner of the Knoxville Silver Knights, but then, like, the woman is? Why would they let a woman own a basketball team? She should own a WNBA team.
I know it's crazy. It's absolutely ridiculous. You can't wrap your mind around it. Mm-hmm. But the man was the owner, and then he died, and then obviously the daughter gets it, but she doesn't know how to do these things. She's bumbling everywhere.
You hear that a woman owns a basketball team, and you go, well, that doesn't sound reasonable. And then you hear that the team is having financial trouble and could lose the franchise, and you go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, that tracks.
She inherited it. She wouldn't go out and actually buy or have the money. Or the wherewithal to buy a basketball team.
She could get her husband to buy her a basketball team, certainly.
Which is Stephen Bauer.
Of course, sure. I love that her dad died, she inherited the team, and whenever somebody is like unhappy with what she's doing with the team, they just go, your father would be turning in his grave if he saw what you were doing with this team. It's like, that's really mean. That's not, you shouldn't just throw that in her face. That's very cruel to say.
They are going so far as to open up the floor for open tryouts.
That's true.
So maybe they are right. Maybe she should be on shit hill.
The team is pathetic from the sounds of it. And they get some idiot from Knoxville to play on the team. That's our best bet. We'll pay him $40,000 a year and that'll balance the books, I guess.
Well, this was my everything's going to be great now line of the movie.
This is a good segment.
I may have a solution, but it's a bit unconventional.
Have you seen the movie The Replacements? It's kind of like that, sort of.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, but there's a strike and they recruit people that have previously had experience at least the college level.
Yeah, this is just like, hey, any asshole can come try out for this NBA team. Fuck it, we don't care anymore. Just come try out, please.
Well, this is more like the Mark Wahlberg movie Invincible, where a regular man tries out for the Philadelphia Eagles or something.
I actually think this is more like the Mark Wahlberg movie Uncharted, where a team is going into uncharted territory with this plan.
I wish I could pull up more Mark Wahlberg movies and we could just do this for a half an hour, but I'm good.
I mean, honestly, it reminds me more of Transformers Age of Extinction than anything else. Also
featuring
Stanley Tucci. Yeah,
because of the transforming.
Mm-hmm. Because of Stanley Tucci hovering over it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you make a good transforming sound?
I can do a good Optimus Prime impression.
Yeah, give it to me.
Goes like
what version of Optimus Prime?
Oh, any version. It's all the same. It's the same guy voicing him. So here's a classic Optimus Prime line for you. Are you ready? He says it in most of the movies. I think he says it in all the movies and maybe several times in them.
Mm-hmm.
I'll kill you. It's a good line. That's an Optimus Prime line.
Who's he killing? You.
All kind, yeah, you. The titular you. The royal you.
The royal we you.
Those movies are bad, but there's something about them that... Nah, I hate them at top to bottom, actually. I can't even...
You're not
going to
see the Beast one?
Of course I'm going to go see the Beast Wars one. Of course. Optimus Primal. Get out of here. That's great. Cheetor? Rhinox? Oh, my heroes on the big screen.
Why didn't they just make a Beast Wars movie?
Well, they did. It's called Transformers... Time to get beasties.
Yeah.
If they don't use the Beastie Boys in it, then I'm not interested.
Time to get wet.
It's beautiful. Can't wait to go see it.
What happens to a transformer when it gets wet?
Oh,
beast or car?
Short circuits. It dies. It dies a horrible death, screaming.
That's why you never see him in water.
No, and you never will.
Yeah. That's good.
Also,
Bay will have something to say about it.
I mean, it also seems kind of like if you were the Transformer that could transform into a submarine or something like that, you'd be pretty left out of most things, I'd imagine. They'd just be like, oh yeah, that's Greg. He transforms into a submarine. He's not involved with 99% of the things we do because none of it takes place in water. But when we need a submarine, we use him, I guess.
I'd rather have a transformer that transformed into a submarine sandwich. What?
Delicious.
What?
That reminds me of my favorite moment in Age of Extinction where a transformer crashes into a Budweiser truck and Mark Wahlberg drinks a Budweiser.
Oh, that's good marketing. I like marketing in films, especially when you can like really see the company.
Oh yeah, when it's just a clear, crisp, clear take of somebody consuming something or looking at something and then going, "I like this product."
That's what I think these PureFlix and Pike's Peak. What is it called?
Pinnacle Peak.
Pinnacle Peak. The pinnacle of peakness. Movies should have. Is more branding, maybe even just like Bible stuff.
Pinnacle Peak is kind of a redundant phrase, isn't it?
Yeah, because you're at the pinnacle if you're at the peak, and you're at the peak if you're at the pinnacle.
I wonder if they know that, or if they were just like, "Yeah, this sounds good. Pinnacle Peak, I like that."
I guess in a range of mountain peaks, the pinnacle peak would be the top.
True enough. Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, there are several peaks, but only one is pinnacle.
Exactly. Yeah, that makes sense.
But saying the word pinnacle, it doesn't make sense to me anymore. Pinnacle is not a word that I understand at this point.
It's a golf brand, and that's weird.
Hey, that's some good corporate synergy right there.
It's a mouthful. Pinnacle, pinnacle, pinnacle.
You know it isn't a mouthful. No, I don't like this transition. David A.R. White's real-life son is in this movie.
What?
Yeah. Wait,
does he play the white boy?
Yeah, Ethan. Ethan, well, Coop is the character's name. Ethan is his real-life son's name. Did you not know that that's David Ayer White's real-life son?
No, I had no idea. I just, like, thought these were good boys playing good basketball with a good teacher.
They are, but one of them is Ethan A.R. White.
That's good.
Very good.
I had no idea he was in the movie that kind of flips this whole movie around for me.
He gets quite a few lines. I would wager this is probably his first movie. I didn't really look into it, but it probably is.
Well, apparently David Ayer White's character, Scott Beck, he loves the Beck.
David Ayer White,
give me more
yeah.
Beck, mm-hmm. Man. He's supposed to be an assistant coach to these kids, but he doesn't really exude a coach figure in front of them at all. He's not really there and like motivating them a lot. He's kind of just around and like, "Oh guys, have fun, whatever. Do drills. I'm gonna leave practice early. Who cares?"
Because I'm a janitor and I have to do janitor stuff.
Yeah, well, the coach tells him like, "Oh, you shouldn't just be volunteering. You should be making money for this." But he doesn't do enough money or do enough things to make money.
Yeah, he's not screaming at the kids. He's not throwing clipboards at the kids. He's not, I mean, let's be honest, sexually harassing them in locker rooms. I mean, you know, we know what high school sports is all about.
He's showing up halfway through practice and leaving early and like, he's just kind of bumming around the court. He's not really an assistant coach.
Yeah, he's dogging. He's not putting in the effort he puts into running wind sprints or whatever the hell he does at the end of this movie. You know what my favorite aspect of this movie is?
The crime.
Oh, sure, of course, yeah. Well, the crime, it is a crime that 52-year-old David A.R. White has the gall to go, "I'm 39 years old." No, in what world? No, you're not.
I have, in big, bold letters on my notes, he can totally pass his 39. Easy.
I'm 35. He can't pass for 39. He looks so much older than me.
He doesn't have a wrinkle on his face, mainly because of the makeup, but
yeah,
he looks a crisp 33 and like athletic as hell.
Oh my God. Watching him run, you go, that's the lean stride of a 39-year-old man, not the lumbering gait of a 52-year-old man.
It's clear that he did some training for this movie, but I'm pretty sure it was just running because he looks a bit skinnier, but he doesn't look like torqued. Like, he should look torqued.
He really has the balls to be like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go out there and hang with these basketball players." Me. And you know what? We'll just like shoot around the fact that I am not holding my own against these guys. We'll shoot around all that.
And they do very successfully. They like
very
closely cut to his sneakers and then him alone shooting a shot.
And like, I love, cause so like, what is that called? The running thing that they do? Is it called wind sprints or is that like running the lines or what is that called?
I remember them as running lines. I forget exactly what they're called. There is like a name for it.
And David's like, oh, I run lines all the time. I'm a movie star. And they go, no, no, you don't understand. It's different. It's different. But like when they show the younger people running lines, they're just like greased lightning running back and forth. And then they show David and it's clear that the guy he's running with is like trotting next to him. It's kind of like, okay, yeah. Like, I bet they had to be like, hey, other extra who's running with David, don't run like you're jogging. Run like you're, like, jog like you're running. Does that make sense?
Yeah, they pulled him aside, they grabbed him by the collar and said, listen, this man is 52 years old and we're trying to make him look like a 39-year-old. You have to act the crap out of this scene.
We're going to convince you that he can run the lines in 34.9 seconds or whatever the hell he does at the end of the movie.
He looks so slow, too. There's no way he could do it within, like, a minute going at his speed. Because you got to go back and forth on the court, like, five times.
Yeah, and further each time.
Further each time.
Oh, yeah, and he had to do it three times.
And there's, like, shots where he's not, like, you're supposed to touch the court before right. You go back to the baseline.
He doesn't touch the court
a bunch of the shots.
He touches with his foot, but that's not the same thing. You got to bend down, my dude. It would have been great if when he did the final run and the guy was like, wow, 34.7, 34.9 or whatever it was, Stephen Bauer just went, yeah, but he didn't touch like four of those lines, so that doesn't count. He was just running. Anyone can run.
That would have been great. A really, like, touching, like, out-of-nowhere moment. But this movie didn't have that.
No, God, no, it didn't. Hey, oh, my God, I love God.
Oh, my God, I love God. Wow, do I love God. I really appreciated how much they inserted God into this movie.
Oh, all over the place. Including, and that's thanks to two men close to our farts. Nick, who is the Mexican guy from Courageous. And I, when we watched Courageous, listeners, go back, I said, that guy's Mexican accent isn't real. He's not Mexico-Mexican. Like, that's not how he talks. And then we see this movie, and I was 100% correct. That is not how he talks.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this man is Filipino.
That would be a wild thing, a revelation, if he was like, by the way, I'm Filipino.
Nothing is impossible. Revelation. The Filipino sensation.
I can't wait to go get a massage.
You thought he was Mexican, but he's actually Filipino, and that's the whole movie.
At the end, he pulls his face off to reveal a Filipino face. It's just the same face.
Filipino the whole time. Yeah, just like flower tattoos on him.
Yeah, he's doing that stick dance that they do, where they clap sticks together and you put your feet in and out of them.
The famous Filipino stick dance.
That's how they catch him. They go, wait a minute, that's not a Mexican thing, that's a Filipino thing. And he goes, oh, you got me!
It starts melting.
It's too hot here in Knoxville, Tennessee, this isn't like the heat we have back in the Philippines.
Yeah, the cool breeze of the Philippines.
The island life in the Philippines.
The crisp island life.
So Nick,
I don't know why that's funny.
Courageous's Mexican man, whatever the hell his name is. I don't remember his name from that movie.
Big old Mexican man can barely get a word out of his mouth because he's like chewing on M&Ms.
No, he's chewing on Slim Jims the whole movie.
Yeah, to quiet his anger that's just bulging inside of him.
And I love that, like, the first time we meet him, he's sucking on a Slim Jim, and he's like, oh, yeah, my therapist said that this would help with my anger issues. And I'm like, getting all jacked up on salt and MSG? I don't know, man.
You're going to get jacked.
And then his anger issues are never mentioned again, which, why make that a part of his character? Just have him be like, yeah, I'm a fat dude, and I like Slim Jims. That's my thing.
Well, at the end, he's kind of eating the Slim Jims, but, like, it doesn't show any progress in his character. Like, he doesn't become a non-angry man, but he's also not angry at any moment.
No, except at the end of the movie when he's screaming at a dog for no reason. Because the dog grabbed his Slim Jim, and he's just going, I'll kill you! I'll kill you! He's just screaming at it, like, incest and insane.
Well, I guess this character does grow because he does, you know, achieve his dream of becoming the White or Silver Knight's pastor.
Oh my God. And you know that as soon as Coach David A.R. White shows up on that team, he's like, all right, now we're all about God. And everyone's like, this kind of thing. All right, fine.
I guess. They're making millions of dollars a year. They can listen to God stuff.
True enough, hey? Yeah, this isn't facing the Giants. This is like real sports where real men are making real money.
Billion-dollar franchises in Kentucky. Where are they? Kentucky?
Tennessee.
Kansas?
Tennessee. Knoxville, Humvee. Tennessee. Yeah. Here's something concerning that I saw in the movie. On the wall of the high school locker room is written, a lion doesn't concern himself with the opinions of sheep. And I went, oh, is Kevin Sorbo in this movie?
Oh, that's a bad sentiment for anything.
Oh, yeah, that's an ugly phrase that's been co-opted by ugly people. That's great. Excellent.
Yeah, that's one of the worst phrases I've ever heard come out of the Christian society. Yeah.
It's right up there with, if you can't handle me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best. It's like those two live together. It's just like, oh, you're perfect for each other. People who say those things, go live together. You're perfect.
Yeah, you're just othering people so you can treat them like crap. It's such a bad phrase. And to be in a high school of all places is just absolutely wild.
And anyone who calls himself a lion or a wolf is a fucking pussy. And I'll say it into this microphone in the comfort of my own home. You're a pussy, bro. A big old wet pussy.
Yeah, you need to get secure, you insecure wolf.
That's right, yeah. Lone wolf isn't a thing. The lone wolf dies. Wolves need to be with a pack. A lion lives with a pack. What are you talking about? It's not even the male lions that do the hunting and killing. They sit around all day and get their nut, which I guess is pretty cool. I kind of want to be a lion, actually.
Lions are absolutely cool. They're a beautiful creature that is on the Serengeti for a reason, not in Chicago eating Franks.
Yeah, that's where the bears are.
Yeah. Chimps beat them, and we won.
That's right. Yeah, we beat those lions. And now you want to go back to that? Go back to the Serengeti, pal. That's what I say. That's what I yell out of my car window at people.
Get over it. Get over it. You're an ape, man.
So what's the story of this movie? The Knoxville, Tennessee, Gray Knights. Gray Knights, bad name for a team.
Silver Knights.
Silver Knights, still a bad name for a team.
Terrible name for a team. I was thinking on that, but then the new Vegas team of hockey is the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, but they went with Golden. They went with the Tops. So why would you go with Silver Knights, the second best team?
Well, Tennessee is the silver to Vegas is gold.
Mm. Hey, wow, I've never heard that before. Did you see that on a t-shirt?
Yeah. Somebody was walking past me right now, and they're wearing it. I'm recording in a mall.
Of course, yeah. You're in the Mall of America.
Yeah, I'm waiting for Santa.
Oh, you know, we didn't even mention who the second person who is all about God is in this movie. And that is, of course, Pastor Farty Marty Dankles. How exciting.
Very exciting. And we finally get to see this actor not so unhinged as Farty Marty Dankles is. Like, they're different characters. This is a real man who has taught real people in wheelchairs how to play basketball.
That's true, yeah. I love that one of the guys' shirts on that wheelchair basketball team just says, no dunking allowed. That's a great shirt for a wheelchair basketball team.
I thought the wheelchair basketball scene was absolutely wild, because in any, like, against all odds sports movie like this is, every single time the person learning a lesson from the people in the wheelchair would get in the wheelchair and play basketball with them, and then he would learn how to love the sport again.
Right.
But that just doesn't happen because they're on a shoestring budget and just watch a bunch of people play wheelchair basketball, do a quick scene, then they're out of there.
Pray. Do a quick prayer.
Yeah. The person at reception is just staring into the camera blurrily the whole time they're filming the scenes. Whatever.
I love that David, they do the prayer, and then David holds the prayer for just a couple extra seconds, and Dankles, like, puts his hand on his shoulder like, hey, brother, you're not alone here. Let's pray together. And David's like, I'm done praying. Goes, oh, okay. Never mind then.
That's a sports movie for you. A lot of hands on shoulders.
Mm. Not enough hands on cans.
Oh.
And by that, I mean bums. Yeah, exactly. Two-handers, yeah.
I just did a visual joke for the listeners. I undercuffed my hands, but put them into together like you would like grab at boobs, you know. But then you turn them around, and you can cup under the cheese,
under boobs,
under butt.
Yeah. Hey, you know who we haven't talked about yet? The smoke show owner of the team, Ryan.
Yeah, the daughter.
The daughter of the dead owner.
Oh, what a rack.
Who I definitely wrote that down when she goes to visit David at his house. I was just like, damn, girl, you got your boobs on lock. They're popping out of that top. Calm down.
She seems too good for this movie, but also exactly placed. It's hard to put my finger on it.
I can't remember what her name is. She's got like a Eastern European name.
Cherie?
No, yeah, I think it's Cherie. I think it's Cherie from Wakanda Forever.
Hmm.
But like, she is one of the stars of Days of Our Lives.
Oh, really? That makes a lot of sense to me.
On IMDb, she's listed as having done over 1,500 episodes of Days of Our Lives, so she's been on there for a while.
You're in, you're out. You shoot a scene. You get paid like $10,000. Mm-hmm. Money, money, money.
And whoever directed or wrote or, like, whoever was involved with the making of this movie definitely has a thing for her feet, because there are so many shots of her just taking off her shoes and walking around barefoot, and it's just like, why? You don't need to include that. You don't need to put her in shoes or something. No? Oh, we got to see her bare feet? All right, fine, go for it.
Well, this makes me think that Darlin Arlen was definitely on set. Mm-hmm. And whispering into the director's ear and saying, show the feet.
Show her taking off her heels.
Feet.
In her bare feet, please. Well, if it wasn't Darlin Arlen, then it was writer of this movie, Tommy Blaze the Blaze Man.
Co-writer, and he knocked it out of the park. I feel like the writers of these movies are definitely not just taking other scripts from other movies and mashing them together and changing the names.
And, like, just inserting God scenes, which it really feels like this movie is. Just like, and then we'll plug in a God scene here and a God scene here and one more God scene there, and then we got a movie.
Yeah, a lion doesn't concern itself with the thoughts of a sheep.
Oh, certainly not. Why? What would a lion have to learn from a sheep? Nothing.
I just picture David A.R. White laying in his silk sheets in his mansion, just saying that phrase to himself over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Getting himself pumped up in the morning. Because he's divorced. He doesn't have Andrea Logan White in his life anymore. So now he's got to be a lion who doesn't concern himself with a sheep.
Yeah, he's got a new affinity of collecting white tiger murals and just surrounding his bedroom with white tigers and silk. Oh, yeah. And freaking sheep all around. Oh, that he's yeah. eating.
Oh, oil paintings. Lovely. On velvet.
Yeah, he's taken up oil paintings, and the only thing he can do is white tigers.
Ooh, yeah, and, you know, not that far off from sheep.
No, but it's kind of the sheep of tigers, yeah. The white tiger.
This movie had at least two great moments in it that I genuinely was like, ooh, I like that. Like, so the first one is this Ryan, the owner of the team, is she's driven around everywhere in a limousine. David Ayer White and her used to date back in the day, like in the universe of this movie. And then she broke up with him and then went off and had a life. But he knew her and she was very rich and all that. And so when they get back, she goes to visit David and he's like talking to her. But before they like part ways, he goes, hey, good to see you, Jerry. And Jerry is just like her driver. And it's just this like nice moment where you're like, oh, right, this Jerry guy's, David knew Jerry back 20 years ago when he was dating this girl. It's nice that he gives him a little shout out.
Yeah, this is what it's like when worlds collide and then they get separated.
Yeah.
And they get put back together.
And they collide again.
They're very comfortable with each other. In fact, like their first kind of moments together where they're like alone, they're like holding hands already, and it hasn't been established that they're like restarting a relationship or anything.
Yeah.
It's too soon.
That was a weird part where it's just like, yeah, they're just walking around holding hands. And you're like, all right, well, pretty presumptuous.
What? Yeah.
Also, she's running. I guess we didn't even mention what like the crux of this movie is, which is they have open tryouts and David Ayer White tries out for the team.
Yeah, we're moving past a lot of that. He's an old college a star that didn't get drafted and was bummed out, left her at the altar, practically,
I guess.
And then became a janitor.
Yeah, and as someone who currently is a janitor, they got janitor stuff all wrong in this movie. First of all, he lives in a trailer park. Ridiculous. Janitors make good money and have pension and have benefits and have a good life. That's a good job. Kids, if you're listening, be a janitor. It's awesome. It's super dope. Especially in a school. Oh my God. It's like the dopest job ever.
And imagine if you would have like skipped your last like 15 years and just became a janitor right out of school. All the bullshit you could have cut through.
Oh my God. I'd be 15 years into my pension at this point. What a dream.
Yeah, you could probably retire.
I'd be getting close, that's for sure.
Oh, man, if only you could become a janitor right out of school. The problem is when you're a student, you look upon a janitor. Society tells you to look upon a janitor negatively.
This movie tells you.
And that's just incorrect.
Yeah, this
whole movie.
This movie's whole premise is built on being a janitor sucks, but I got news for you. It's the best. It's such a little secret treat of a job.
The one thing that I always come back to when we're watching these Pure Flix originals is that the writers, Tommy Blaze,
yeah,
etc.,
are
just stuck in ideals and stuff that happened in the 80s and 90s, like shitting on janitors, women are not supposed to own basketball teams.
Well, that's true, though. That hasn't changed. That's still a fact. Yeah.
But it's changing.
That's why the WNBA exists.
Exactly. But it's so steeped in a forgotten time, mm-hmm. and they're trying to bring it back because I guess a lot of them are attached to Christian ideals. I don't know.
They're old boomers, and it shows. There's not a person under the age of 40 that works on these movies. Maybe the directors are a little younger, but anyone involved in the creation of it is an old man with old man ideals, and that's fine, but like... Don't dump on being a janitor. Next, they're going to make a movie about how crappy being a garbage man is. And it's like, garbage man's also a great job. What are you talking about?
Especially nowadays, all they get to do is drive around and then use a robot arm to, like, get a bin into the back. They don't do anything.
No, it's phenomenal. And they make buku bucks doing it.
Oh, the pension.
Oh, my God. And you know what they don't have to deal with? Just dumb idiots in the office being like, oh, did you watch The Bachelor last night? Nah, I'm in my garbage truck. I'm not listening to this garbage.
Yeah. Oh, the weather sure is crappy.
Yeah, I know. I was out in it all day collecting garbage. this movie also contains, like, maybe the best joke they've ever done in one of these movies. I gotta say, it was a pretty good little bit.
Preach.
Do you know the part I'm talking about?
No.
So... Nick, the guy from Courageous, goes to see Farty Marty Dankles to ask for help on what to do about David A.R. White because some bad things happened to him, and he's like, oh, he's having a crisis of faith, and Nick is like, I need to help my best friend. So he goes to Farty Marty Dankles, and he's like, Pastor, I need your help. Like, how can I help David A.R. White? And Farty Marty Dankles is like, you can help him, and you can do all this stuff for him, but you can't force him to do anything. And then it cuts to David A.R. White going, why are you forcing me to do this? Says to Nick, as Nick takes him to the wheelchair basketball game. And I was like, that's the best joke you've ever written, Pierflix. That's a great joke.
Yeah, cut and printed. It was absolutely delightful.
I mean, was it as good as anything from Hitting the Brakes or Malibu Down the Family Man? Probably not. But, you know, Tommy Blaze, you nailed it with this one.
I'd take any of those shows over this movie.
Yeah, I miss those shows. I miss those days when we could watch those shows.
I just felt like life was good then, and the PureFlix was putting out good content that I wanted to watch. And maybe I put this movie a bit on a pedestal. I really wanted to love this movie, and I wanted it to have so much fun.
And it kind of does. There was definitely several times where I was like, oh, I still have like an hour left of this movie. Oh, no. But by the end, it really, I was enjoying the last third of the movie, but that middle third is just a slog. Ugh.
Yeah, it's, there's montages to be sure. There's training montages.
Oh, yeah.
But mostly running. Like, David and I are... White runs so much, and it's supposed to indicate that he's healthy and fit, and he's definitely 39.
Oh yeah, a brisk, healthy, sexy 39.
But it's all running.
Yeah.
And he's just like I swear 20 minutes of this movie is just showing him running.
Does he think
somewhere.
He's Tom Cruise? Why is he running so much?
Well, he's too tall to be Tom Cruise, that's true. For sure.
I love that, like, there's a shot of him running up, like a Rocky shot, where he's running up the stairs to, like, the top of, like, the pinnacle peak of something, and he's like, yeah, and he has his moment of triumph. But they only show him running the last five stairs. They don't show him from the bottom going. They showed Rocky running up that whole staircase, but David, they're like, eh, you can do he's like, I just want to do the top five. I don't want to do the whole thing.
Well, Sly the Sylvester Stallone was like 25 when he did that.
Well, David's only 39. That's not that much older.
52.
52, one. Yeah. Hey, as David Ayer White says in this movie, and then is written several times at the end of the movie, and is also the name of the movie, nothing is impossible.
Nothing is impossible. I did learn that throughout this movie, so that's great.
Yeah. Did you stand up and cheer when he said that to those kids he was signing autographs to?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good.
I stood up and cheered basically this whole ending of the movie because it gets fun enough, I guess, at the end when he's running wind sprints. I mean, that's the whole combination is that he has to do wind sprints for like under 35 seconds.
I guess. So he's been trying out for the team, and then miraculously he makes it through the first round, even though he's 52 years old. And then even more miraculously makes it through the second round and gets to the final three. And they're like, oh, we're only picking two people for the team. Well, that's kind of shitty to have only three people in the finals then, to be like, you two, your dreams have come true. You get out of here. You're done. But that's how it basically works out.
Basketball's famously a very small team. You only really need 10 guys, so.
True, yeah.
You're
I guess.
You're in, you're out, you're out.
Yeah, and guess what, David? You're out.
You're out and you're in. Well, he gets to the third round, but only as like a publicity stunt.
Right.
Because it's been leaked that he's involved with the female owner somehow.
Right.
And only through teams. Death that she can become the owner.
It's why they shouldn't own teams. They just get involved with players.
But he nuts up because he sees the people in wheelchairs playing basketball. Mm-hmm. And he shows up to the final tryout.
When, like, she tells him, like, so Stephen Bauer tells Ryan, the female owner of the team, that they're only taking David to the next round because it's like you said, good publicity. It's like, it's a feel-good story for this town to have this former basketball star make it to the finals. But then, like, my whole thought process was like, but he's not going to make the, like you've said, he's not going to make the team. So what did you think was going to happen when the whole town rallied around this guy and then he gets to the finals and you go, nah, you're not good enough? Like, do you think the team is going to do you think the town is going to support the team? Or they're going to be like, burn the stadium down. We hate these people now.
Well, any publicity is good publicity.
True.
The whole thing surrounding this is that there's a lot of publicity and marketing around this, but then it's like shot in a high school gym with like 10 people watching.
The news crew say the stands are packed.
There's nobody there.
There's maybe 20 people in those stands. Maybe. That's generous.
That's very generous. And they just didn't surround this movie with enough heat.
Oh, yeah. And they're clearly, like, there's the regular court where the team plays, and then the practice court where the movie takes place. And the real court is a real court somewhere. Like, it's like a professional-looking it's probably a college basketball court, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
So why didn't, I guess they just weren't allowed to shoot there.
It's much cheaper to film in the churches. Gym.
Oh, definitely a church gym. 100%. Yeah.
But definitely. Yeah. I mean, they had the rights and they probably had a day or two at the real gym to show the ending.
Yeah, of course. And for
the real stadium.
For David to point out that she's barefoot, of course.
Yeah. But to get more than a day, I mean.
Oh, you can't. I mean, they got maybe an hour. Maybe.
Maybe. And this is going out to PureFlix. PureFlix has to pay for this whole movie.
That's true. But they're making stupid money over at PureFlix.
Crazy money.
David Ayer White's worth $1 million.
At least.
Yeah.
And Hill silk sheets.
Oh, and those velvet paintings. Oh.
Oh, my God.
So then it gets down to it, and it's like David and the two and the soldier and the firefighter who are going to make the team. I love that they made sure that they were a soldier and a firefighter. Thank you for your service.
Yes, and the only way they could be fit enough to, or a janitor that runs a lot.
Yeah. Did you love when David A. R. White's having a bad day and he goes into the school at night and just takes all the basketball trophies and all the like articles about him out of the like display case and throws them in the garbage?
There's no way those are all your trophies, David A. R. White. High schools don't keep a shrine to some has-been.
I mean, they had the articles for him, but also, if those are the championship trophies, you didn't win those alone. You had a whole team of people. So they don't matter? You're just going to throw out their trophies?
Very selfish. Very selfish of him. Mm-hmm. But this was my favorite scene of the whole movie. Him being a real human and throwing out all these trophies.
Having a depressed moment. When he was walking across the bridge when he was very sad, I was like, is he going to jump off this? Like, there was a moment where it looked like he might climb up on the bridge. And I'm like, David, don't do that in this movie.
Well, I wish. You know, that would have brought something to this film, I feel.
So, of course, he doesn't make the team. Even though he runs the wind sprint in under 35 seconds. It takes him three tries. But so first time he does it, 36.5. And everyone's like, oh, and he's like, I could do it. And they go, okay, fine, do it again. So he does it again, 36.1. They're like, look, you tried your best. You're just not going to do it. And he goes, I can do it. And I really hope that the third time he did it, it was going to be like 42.
Yeah. Like, fail.
Just bad.
Yeah, just like pass out.
He just runs full on into that wall, gets a concussion, and just is gone.
Well, they're trying to do a Tin Cup moment. At the end of Tin Cup...
Never seen Tin Cup.
Tin Cup, he tries to make this impossible shot over the water, and he hits it into the water. This is, like, the end of the tournament. He has to make this shot to, like, force a playoff or almost win the tournament, and he hits it into the water, and he's basically out of the tournament, but he keeps hitting it, and he keeps falling in the standings, and then like 20 balls later it finally goes in and everybody loves him. He loses the tournament, but he wins everybody's respect.
That sucks.
Yeah, but it's better than this.
It must be, right? Well, Kevin Costner's in it, so of course it's going to be better than this.
It's shot well, and it's built up appropriately, right? You know, all the things.
The stands are actually packed.
Yeah.
So, but he doesn't make the team, but then the coach is like, but guess what, buddy? You might not have made the team, but guess what? Now you're the assistant coach for the Tennessee Silver Knights.
Goes, oh, when did you come up with this great idea?
Yeah, I do love that. The coach, who is the guy who plays Martian Manhunter in Justice League. The whole movie, I was like, who is this guy? Oh, he's Martian Manhunter. Okay, got it.
Mm-hmm.
He just drew up a contract. He's been threatening to quit the team forever. He drew up a contract for David A. R. White to be the assistant coach, and then they give him the job, and then the coach dies off screen in the years in between the end of the movie and the actual end of the movie.
Yeah. Apparently he decided to make him a coach on the first day of practice or something.
Yeah,
when his first tryout is like, no, you didn't.
When I saw him walking through the parking lot.
No, you've been crapping on this guy this whole time, and you wanted him to get out, like, this whole movie. And then all of a sudden, you wanted him to be the coach. It was your idea.
Yeah.
But they do kill him off, which is just desserts.
Which is pretty funny. They just go, his sudden... Because they had to be like, well, we need David to be the coach by the end of this movie, not the assistant coach. That's not a hero's journey, to become the assistant coach. Yeah. So maybe we'll just... I don't know, say he had like a rapid onset of an illness, like I don't like a respiratory thing or something.
Type 2 diabetes.
Yeah. And he just died of complications. He got his right foot cut off and then he died of complications. Yeah,
bled out. That was his biggest artery and they had no idea.
His blood doesn't clot very well because he's got diabetes and his breath smelled like rotting fruit.
That's Tennessee for you.
Yeah, that's Tennessee for you, baby.
They cut off your limbs. They don't check your veins.
Coach dies. Designer has joined the team. That one basketball player, or the one kid who David A. R. White kind of mentors, I really thought was Designer for a good chunk of this movie.
I don't know who those are.
You know who Designer is? No. Rapper, guy who did the song Panda?
Yeah.
That Kanye West stole for Father Stretch My Ass Part 2? You don't know Designer?
No, I have no idea.
Well, that's the only song he's known for, so.
He is that character that is supposed to be mentored by the main character, and it's supposed to show growth, but I swear David A.R. White's kid gets more lines.
Coop!
Like, he's... David A.R. White's kid.
Yeah,
Ethan Hawke.
Yeah, well, his character's name is Coop, and his name is Ethan in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. More lines and more camera time than the main character that's supposed to get mentored.
Yeah, as he should. He's getting his SAG card for this movie. That's a pretty big deal.
Oh, man,
deal.
You gotta get your SAG.
Oh, man, he's sagging all over the place.
It's such a fun transition between the end and him announcing that he's the assistant coach. And then it's like a scene later, he's just dead. They just kill him off, and he's gone. Like it's beautiful.
He gives David the contract. He looks into the camera and goes, everything's going to be great now. And then the next shot is his funeral.
And so he died, of course. And...
Now, if they did that, that would be the best joke Tommy Blaze ever wrote.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You know what, listeners? Forget we said that, because we're going to save that and put it in our Christian movie.
Yeah. I want the listener to take what we said and make a movie out of it.
Okay, you got it. And we'll call it Nothing is Impossible.
Yeah. Revelation.
Hey, Steve, can Christians eat pork?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Adam, because according to this movie, I don't know if Christians can eat. Because I don't see anybody consuming food during this whole movie.
What are you talking about? David A.R. White eats a hamburger and a giant ice cream sundae.
Full disclosure for the listener, once I realized this movie wasn't going to give me my nut that I wanted out of this sports movie, I didn't pay too much attention. Especially to the minutia of them eating. Yes, I did see two fat people trying to sit on a floor and talk to each other about God. Mm. But... That's the best part of Marty Marty Dankles and the Mexican coach sitting. They're like struggling on that floor.
They're so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And you'd think he would have been like, hey, why don't we sit in a pew, right? Like, we're in a church.
Let's get a pew. Let's get a chair. Let's get something going on here because... kids would have uncomfortable moments sitting on this step.
Yeah, we're each going to need help getting up. So, like, one of us is going to have to get up first to help the other one up, but we're both going to need help. How are we going to do this? That scene would have been great if... I mean, that's the scene that ends with him being like, you can't force him, and then cut to him being like, why are you forcing me? But it would have been great to see them both have to, like roll onto their stomachs and then push themselves up and then, like... totter and stand, like, watch them struggle to get. That would have been a beautiful ending to that scene.
Beautiful. Or yeah, like a couple of Humpty Dumpties.
Mm-hmm. And like, also, we said can Christians eat pork, and you didn't think people ate, but that guy's eating Slim Jims the whole movie,
right? Yeah. It's like a main plot point that's, for that one character.
Yeah, that's,
and Slim Jims famously maybe pork.
I don't know what a Slim Jim's got to be beef, right? It's got to be beef.
It's got to be big beef for the Slim Jim. But they don't prove that there's pork in it. True. They don't prove that he's actually Christian. I guess they prove that he's Christian by wanting to be a pastor. But as far as I'm concerned, this movie did not convince me that a 52-year-old man could play basketball in the NBA. Not even like a minor league or anything like that, but the NBA. And it also didn't convince me that Christians can eat pork. Now, Adam, do you think Christians can eat pork?
I don't know. It's not my segment. I love you.
I love you. You have to chime in. You're a chime in guy.
No. This is your thing, baby.
No, this is how we rate these movies, based on a scale of can Christians eat pork.
Tell your cat to stop messing with your microphone.
I know, I'm trying, but it's not going well.
I don't think so. Not based on this movie. They can eat Slim Jims.
See, we both need to chime in because we both have something to say.
I love you.
I love you.
We love you, please. It's weird not having the ho ho ho.
I'm just
Chisholm.
Ho, ho, ho.
I'm Chisholm.
That's great. Chisholm.
Yeah, it was fine. There's no Beckman.
He does like battle, though. We didn't talk about that.
Well, you did. You mentioned it, but yeah, we didn't get into it.
We didn't dive in.
No, we should have. Zed, careful around that mic, Zed.